Hey guys, it's Alfredo.
And this is Brian.
And this is Film Purgatory. So thank you guys so much for joining us this week. This week, we're going back to the franchises, man. It's been a while.
Yep, feels good.
Yeah. Back to the roots.
An interesting franchise. I'll say kind of unique in its own way. Not a unique genre. But I would say a refreshing twist to this genre. What do you think?
I think it's a franchise that has done a pretty good job at blending or paying homage to a previous franchise that's somewhat similar and putting its own spin on it, its own touch. It's you can say it's a little bit foreign because it's based on a foreign intelligence agency. But we're talking about the Kingsman guys. Kingsman. I remember you mentioning this franchise like a while back.
When the first one came out.
It was 2014, right?
Yeah. So we were just starting out college. It's been a while.
So far, they've had three movies. Kingsman Secret Service 2014, Kingsman The Golden Circle 2017?
I think so.
And Kingsman. It's like a prequel. Did that come out 2019? 2020?
I'm not sure. I think more recent than that. I think it was like 2021. Maybe 2020.
Producer Skippy just confirmed it's 2021.
Awesome. Yeah, last year.
Thanks, Skippy. That was a prequel, I guess.
Yeah. I enjoyed it, though. I thought the third one was... You know, it wasn't like... I watched it out of curiosity. Just because, all right, I've seen the first one, I've seen the second one, whatever it was. And I was kind of in the mood for action, which is not the usual for me. So I said, hey, what the heck? I'll go and I'll watch The Kingsman, like you said, whatever. I knew it was a prequel going into it. I knew it was going to be more old-timey, especially being set in England, or at least an English Secret Service. And this one was cool because it was the origins. It showed how the characters came together.
Right.
Where did this money come from? Because, of course, you have to begin with a source of money to have these gadgets and technology and have these high-paying missions, or I should say, high-value assassins or slash bodyguards slash whatever the hell they were, you know, beforehand, military people, whatever. So seeing the origins was fun. It was interesting, a little emotional, right? It was intense, I will say. There's a specific scene, I guess we'll talk about it later. Very intense. It was a good scene.
Kingsman 2014, directed by Matthew Vaughn.
You said that correct?
I don't know. Maybe. Could have been. The director of X-Men First Class and the first two Kingsman movies. So I like that consistency. Yeah, the cast in this one is pretty good. Taron Egerton. He was in Rocket Man.
Yeah.
And Sing.
He was a voice actor?
He was a gorilla.
Oh, okay. Oh, so he could sing, because that gorilla could sing.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Colin Firth is in this one. Colin is in Mamma Mia, your favorite movie. Mm-hmm. And Love Actually. Mark Strong, we talked about last week. Samuel, I Hate Planes and Snakes, Jackson, Mark Hamill from Star Wars, and Michael Caine, Sir Michael Caine. I have no idea if he's knighted or not.
We're referring to the first Kingsman, right?
The first Kingsman, okay. 2014. And Michael's from the Dark Knight trilogy, of course. So Gary Eggsy Unwin, his father, who was part of a secret agency called the Kingsman. I guess this is a non-governmental agency of spies that don't have to abide by certain rules like the MI6 or the CIA does.
Yep.
Which is nice. It's pretty refreshing.
They're more underground.
Eggsy has some sort of a mentor.
Played by Colin Firth.
Who his father, Eggsy's father, had saved his life. So I guess he kind of feels inclined to help this kid out.
Correct.
And he helps him by getting him into the Kingsman. The agency we're talking about, of course.
Kind of recruiting him there, but the kid was... It was very convenient, kind of like the animes, or the kid's already super gifted.
Right.
He's the best of the best, and you know, in all physical ways, he could fight, and he's fast, and he's doing parkour. Hey, by the way, because of your father, we're gonna recruit. He's like, no, it has nothing to do with your already insane abilities, right? But whatever. But it's fun to see. I'm a fan of parkour. I think when you can incorporate martial arts and parkour, you get a cool like chase scene and some cool fight scenes, and that's what this movie does. This movie delivers really well. It's very rewatchable. When you're bored, it's like, just put it on. It's pretty cool to watch. It's a satisfying for your eyes.
At the same time, there's an underlying plot that involves Samuel Jackson's character, Valentine. He's this, what would you say, like a technological guru that has designed a device that gives you free phone calls, free internet, forever, something like that.
A mad scientist, if you will.
Mad scientist, that's nice. He has lifts, too, huh? Does he have like...
Yeah, I think so. It's been years, but he did have like a speech impediment. We'll go with that.
So he devised this genius plan to mind control everybody to basically kill themselves. His idea was to decrease the human population because if we didn't, then we're going to kill ourselves either way.
Yeah. We've seen that we've heard of that concept in many movies. That's right. To me, that's like played out already. Yeah. Humans are the virus.
Right.
They're killing Earth. And I'm like, all right, bro, but can the screenwriters, like, can y'all write something new? Because I've heard that already too many times. I would say this is when I was starting to get tired of hearing that. But like you said, it does make sense no matter how many times you hear it. It's just like, come up with something new.
I just think
a little fresh.
I like it how he went about things. Because like, he's not killing anybody. They're killing themselves.
Correct. It was also a form of the survival of the fittest.
Right.
Because technically, they were fighting each other, not necessarily committing suicide.
Right.
So obviously, yeah, you're dwindling the population. If you're in a room full of 100, only one comes out. No shit. Right. But the one is the strongest, quote unquote. That's kind of, so I guess in a way, but it's just they kind of completely get rid of all consciousness. They're just straight barbaric.
Right.
As soon as this signal comes out of his phones, as you mentioned earlier. And because of this, we get probably one of the best action scenes in the last 20 years, if not number one. It's hard to beat
in the church scene.
Yeah. That scene is crazy.
That was heavily censored somewhere. I think it was like Taiwan. They like really censored that bitch.
Yeah, I don't doubt it.
But yeah, that involved Colin Firth's character Galahad. He was obviously a trained assassin.
Yeah.
And he's in a church with like regular people, and that device goes on and he just goes ape shit. That's just crazy.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool.
The cinematography, aside from the choreography, the cinematography was. Like the whole scene is hard to describe, you know, but just words. You gotta watch it. It's crazy.
I gotta say, the soundtrack of this movie wasn't bad either. I like a lot of the songs that came out, which was pretty cool.
I don't remember, to be honest.
You know, this movie, or I guess this franchise, was loosely based on the Secret Service comic book series. So yet another thing that is based on literature.
Yeah, makes sense,
I guess.
I'm mad at it.
I like the dog. Little pug was cute. JB, when Eggsy's character is being trained, he's given a dog, and then you know, when the dog was trained, that's how they'll know that he was trained.
Okay.
You know, it's funny that Taron Egerton is actually scared of dogs in real life. So I don't know.
I feel like that's such an old phobia. Nowadays, you don't really hear about people that are scared of dogs.
Right. And
that is also refreshing to hear.
But I did mention that it did pay homage to a lot of previous movies or previous franchises, and most of that would have to be the Bond series. I feel like the classic super agent that you think of when you hear secret agent would be James Bond, 007. Mm-hmm. So this took, it paid homage to it, and then it gave it a little spin. A lot more violence, which I enjoyed.
Yes, a lot less talking,
right,
than the Bond movies. You know, I'm trying not to sound like a hater, because I understand the Bond is a classic and it's one of those that won't die out. The actor may die, the character may die.
Right.
They'll just reboot it with somebody new.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with it. It's also based on literature. Mm. It's a fan favorite, I understand, but I'm sorry. The movies, just a lot of them can be boring.
What a hater. A
lot of talking, and the action sometimes is short-lived. Mm. And don't even get me started on the older films. The older films are older.
Right.
Like, as we've talked about, it's hard for films to hold over time with, you know, with the advancements in technology and all that. So what this movie does, as you said, it adds its own spin, and it does it the way it should be, with crazy good action that you would expect from the trained assassins, from trained spies, killers that happen to be also borderline geniuses, because that's why they get so far in their careers, for being so much smarter than the rest of the killers and trained assassins.
Right.
So Eggsy in this case had the perfect mentor, somebody who not only was top of their game but had an emotional connection, because he had his life saved by his, by Eggsy's father. If this movie, or if the, I should say, if the second and third incorporated a little more of the same cinematography that we saw from the first, and stuck to that type of fighting style, I think that we would have three movies of equal value, like equal rating. We'll give our ratings later, but when you look at the second one, they still kind of held true to the gory part and the technology part.
Yeah, yeah.
But the fight scenes weren't as satisfying. They were almost over the top.
Right.
I felt. Mm. Still enjoyed the movie, but the first one to me was is like, you know, on the pedestal.
I feel like they tried to incorporate a lot of new characters,
yeah,
different people in there, and it just did not mesh well with the original characters. I didn't like the fact that they brought back Galahad, which was Colin Firth's character. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It just left a bad taste in my mouth. But like you said, the fight scenes, which is something that they excelled at, it just seemed that tried a little too hard on that.
Tried a little too hard, correct.
But as far as the story goes for the second one, I don't know. Something was missing there too. I would feel it fell flat. Not as, I guess it's not as refreshing as the first one.
Right.
It never is.
Yeah. We're trying not to sound like haters here. It is difficult. Once you have something a little unique or a little like fresh twist, as we said, it's hard to replicate. Maybe you're trying to outdo yourself. You feel that there's pressure. Whatever the case may be, there's a whole team. I don't know if any one person deserves blame, but if I had to choose one, definitely the first. The second is worth watching, and so is the third.
Mm.
The third is just, you know, takes a step back in the sense of like technology.
Right.
Characters are okay, you know. I think there was one or two that are cool, but the little twist at the end, which I guess you can kind of see coming, maybe not 100%, but it's one of those twists that you're expecting soon. It's just there's a character whose face is not shown for a reason, so it's gonna make you question things for the whole movie.
Real quick, Julianne Moore, Channing Tatum, Pedro Pascal from GOT, Game of Thrones, Jeff Bridges, and Halle Berry join the second one. And a quick synopsis on the second one. Kingsman's headquarters being blown up. The Kingsmen find out there's a new spy organization in the United States called the Statesman. That's kind of...
Spiders.
Yeah, what the fuck is that? So they're both the Statesman and the Kingsmen are going against the Golden Circle, but then there's a little twist.
Right, one of the Statesmen, played by Pedro Pascal, turns out to be working for the Golden Circle, and I guess a little, not backstory, but just a quick information. The Golden Circle, their big villain reveal, whatever, is that the head of the cartel is Julianne Moore. This cartel has been putting, like, a toxin in these drugs, so there's a lot of junkies that are just dying out there, and she... publicly says it. So now she's like in the public eye. Everybody knows who she is, a bad guy, whatever. She doesn't care. She tells the president, she says, you know, that she'll give them the antidote if her cartel was immune from prosecution. You know, so she's playing her cards.
Right.
Big villain. Obviously, people don't like this. A lot of people are dying. A lot of drug addicts are dying. And I believe in the end, this is a lot of random stuff. Because in the end, when they were going to find Pedro Pascal, Elton John. I don't know why I get the name backwards.
Yeah,
Elton John is there playing on the piano, and then there's these like robotic killer dogs. Really random. The ending sequences are just, I don't know,
right.
Which is to me part of the reason why the story falls short. It's just kind of like, it doesn't feel like a Kingsman movie anymore. I don't know. Feels like if Jimmy Neutron became a villain.
Yeah.
That's kind of what.
Got a blast.
Yeah.
I don't know. It received a lot of mixed reviews. But the third one was pretty good. It did a lot better.
I thought so. It was a little less sloppy. It was just more straightforward. You know what I'm saying? We have the creator of the Kingsman. He has a son and a wife. They are on some trip somewhere. The movie begins. They're somewhere. They're supposedly they're very rich, but they're not. They're humble. You know, they actually help out the poor, and they do like, you know, they're like missions out in other countries. And they try to teach the son that, you know, you have an obligation to help people, especially when you're in a position of power, whatever. Unfortunately, there's an attack. The wife gets killed. The son witnesses it years later. The son is older, and he feels the need, the patriotic, because it's during World War One, and he feels the need to fight for his country. And so he joins the military. he goes out, and this is that scene I was talking about. There's this crazy good fight scene. Because, as you know, you've heard of No Man's Land, Alfredo?
Yes, in actual
warfare.
In actual combat, yeah, okay, yeah.
So,
real life.
Right, so between the trenches, there's that area that nobody can go. And why? Because the second you hop on there, you're getting killed. You're getting shot.
Boom!
So they had this mission. They were going in secret. And they're trying, I think they were looking for something. And so it was like five or six of them. They're moving across silently. And they can't fire shots because even if they get a good shot on an enemy, their own side won't be able to tell because it's so dark. They won't be able to tell who's out there. Any noise, any motion, they're just going to shoot on sight. That's the orders. So it's very dangerous on both sides. That's why it's called No Man's Land. Anyways, it's a cool scene. They all have guns. All of a sudden, there's an enemy group about the same amount. I think it was about five or six of them. And they're all looking at each other. You know, guns pointed. And they all kind of make this the same, you could say, the same agreement. Because they're in the same boat. We shoot, we're all dead. So might as well put the guns down. Let's fight for real, you know, with some knives, with fists. Whoever comes out alive comes out alive. But we can't shoot the guns because they hear that. They're shooting both sides. So right. You're dead. Man, that was a crazy scene. That was a nice fighting scene.
Nice.
The main character's son, who was in part of that group, gets saved by his commander using a gun. But because the commander was standing and the other guy was standing, they all get just ripped to shreds by the Gatling guns. You know, the big caliber guns. Pa, pa, pa. Dead instantly. The kid's son, the main protagonist, he stays alive. He stays low to the ground. He's some sort of, you know, plot convenience, right? He stays alive. So it's like, okay, fine, I can deal with that. He makes it back to his land, but he was actually wearing tags of a different soldier because he didn't want to leave. His father had, because of the position of power he has, had requested him back. Like, no, he's gonna stay and do busybody work, like paperwork. Away from the front lines. But the son insisted on wanting to be in the front lines. It's a cool scene, little sequence, right? So what he ended up doing was the son. He ended up grabbing one of the soldiers that delivered the message. They switched information tags, you know, the names on the uniform, everything. And the messenger got sent back to his castle pretending to be the son. So of course the father's like, who the fuck are you? Where's my son?
Right.
He's like, look, I'm really sorry, but he wouldn't let me. He stayed back. What happened is he came back to his side after the No Man's Land battle wearing this other soldier's whatever tags. He came back and there was like a disconnect. There was like, yo, who are you? Because I know you're not that guy. Like, that dude was in my platoon, whatever. And he's like, oh, you know, wait. Oh, man, you know, he was about to explain himself and like, bro, on sight, just bang, blasted him in the head. Cut. And that, to me, that was like, oh, let's go. So no plot convenience. It was realistic.
Right.
The soldiers didn't play, bro. If they knew that you're wearing like their comrade's uniform,
right,
you're an enemy. Bitch, you're a spy. Bang. Got killed immediately.
Boom.
So it was devastating for the father, you know, obviously, to find out, given that he was like so adamant against his son joining the war. He didn't want him to lose. He knew what war looked like. So it was sad. And I thought, to me, that separated it from the second movie.
Right.
It was a good sequence of action, emotion, you know, the way things played out. The story, just the story was better overall, I think.
Very realistic. Hey, I made a mistake. Matthew Vaughn did direct this one as well.
Oh, so all three.
He directed all three.
Okay.
This one starred Ralph
Fiennes. You know who that is, right?
Yeah. Well, Squidward looking ass.
Squidward. That's Voldemort. He shall not be named.
Harris Dickinson. Stanley Tucci. I feel like everybody knows who this guy is by face.
Yeah, I was just going to say that sounds familiar, but I can't put the face on.
He was in Devil Wears Prada. The Lovely Bones. He was a bad guy in Lovely Bones.
I don't know what that is.
Okay, well, try my best here. He was in Easy A. He was the father in Easy A. With Emma Stone.
Oh.
That dude. The bald dude. Cue ball looking ass.
I know exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
That's funny. That's crazy how I know by face. Like, I know Easy A. I know the father from that movie.
Jimon Honsu. We talked about
before. We've talked about it many times.
So, like, go back.
From Blood Diamond.
Blood Diamond. The guy from Blood Diamond. That's it. I'm not going to say it again.
He played a cool character, too.
Yeah, he was cool. He was all right. Charles Dance was in there. So, another Game of Thrones character.
He was cool. Not a big character, but he was cool. Played one of the big, like, high-ranking military officials.
He was Arthur.
So he had a connection, a rapport, a bit of a relationship politically with the main protagonist, which is played by Ralph Fiennes, Voldemort. His name, he was the Duke of Oxford. Wow. So there was a relationship between him and Charles Dance. So the Duke of Oxford's son is the one who I've been, I just realized that I haven't specifically like mentioned any names.
Right.
But he's the one who did pass away, the son. His name was Conrad.
Ah.
So his father is the main protagonist, Duke of Oxford. So very rich, very nice palace. Gemma Arterton was also in this movie, who I've seen her in a couple things. I mainly remember her from the Clash of the Titans movie. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah.
I liked her there. I liked her here. I don't know. I would like to see her in more.
Mm.
So, Alfredo, overall rating, all three movies.
I see what you did there. Okay, all right. All right, that's fine. I like the first one. Second one fell hard. Third one is okay. I don't think none surpassed the first one to me.
No, definitely not.
I'ma Simon Cowell this bitch. I'ma give it a 6.
Okay.
Fuck you.
That's fair.
Damn,
bro. That's not a bad score.
What the fuck?
Just cause I enjoyed the first one, you know, and the third one had a cool fight scenes, and you know, there are certain aspects that I enjoy enough to give it a 6.5.
Respectable. I like it. Appreciate it. Thank you. Sounds good. 6.5, 6. I mean, it's not bad. I would definitely watch it if you're in the mood for action. I mean, personally, when I'm in the mood for action, I just get a Tom Moneybags Cruise film and just pop it in there.
I can see that. Better than the Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, that's too much, bro. Family or no family, that's too much. Just stop. But yeah, it's not a bad one. The first two, I saw it on Vudu, but the third one's on HBO Max.
To the max.
Oh, and by the way, there is a Kingsman movie coming out, a new Kingsman movie coming out next year.
Yes,
right?
Yes, it's scheduled to release next year.
Right, nice, cool. Do we have any information on that? I think it's...
Put it under wraps for now.
Yeah. Well, it's coming, so... Brian, have you seen anything that you want to talk about?
No.
I went to go see Nope.
Oh, Nope. Jordan. That's right, the Jordan Peele film. His third film. How did that go?
So when I first saw the trailers, I was intrigued. And then the next couple of trailers, they showed a little bit more. And I was less intrigued. So going into the film, I had a certain expectation. And it wasn't very high. But after watching the film, it did surpass my expectations. I thought it was very enjoyable. You know, there you can make a lot of speculations on what it means and the significance of this. And we talked about this before, you know. What happened to watching a movie just for fun? You know, I hate the fact that, you know, the symbolism is always a main ingredient in movies. And,
yeah.
And you did mention that Jordan Peele does that in a lot of his movies. And I get that. But at face value, I think this is a very enjoyable film nonetheless. It's not his masterpiece. I don't believe so. But it's still an enjoyable movie. I would definitely watch it. I don't know. I just like... I like the alien aspect in movies. I think that's a very hard genre to tackle on. So I do appreciate the...
So you'd give him overall thumbs up for his portrayal of the alien...
For his
species.
Yeah, for his interpretation, because it's not necessarily what you think.
Okay.
And I guess in that aspect, I can appreciate. I like twists. I don't like mainstream shit, you know?
So there was a twist.
It's not really a twist, but yeah, it's not mainstream. I can give you that.
It switches the perspective.
Exactly.
Okay,
so
okay,
it's...
Okay. Well, it's fine. Like, I expect that. He did it in the first movie. He did it in the second movie.
Right.
So it's cool.
Right.
I appreciate his movies. Not just for the face value, but the symbolism as well. Like you said, a lot of movies, it kind of seems like you have to dig and dig and dig. And,
right.
And I'm like, if I have to dig to the point where I need to figure something out to enjoy the movie, then
yeah,
maybe it's not that good.
Exactly.
Because I mean, you can tell me it's all about 1, 2, and 3, and 4, or whatever. But I'm just worried about, am I entertained?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Don't get me wrong. Props to the writing.
Of course.
Oh, cool symbolism. Nice metaphor.
Right.
I like your analogies. But it was boring.
Yeah.
You know, and if I had to pick a movie where that to me is the perfect example, would be the Lighthouse.
Mm.
Like, that was all symbolism, all metaphor. It was literally just that. And it was like, the whole time, like, yo, this movie's kind of boring.
I shouldn't have to suffer for you to flex your literary skills.
You know what I'm trying to say? Like, for that, write a book.
Exactly.
You know, don't waste, because I'm not going to say waste, because I'm sure some people did enjoy the film.
Right.
But, like, in that movie specifically, like, I've always said, Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe were fantastic. Mm-hmm. The movie was boring.
Right.
I'm sorry, it's the truth. Like, I don't even think it's an opinion.
What a hater.
Like, if you like the movie, you like symbolism, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But the movie was boring. Just admit you like to be bored. Please.
Read a book.
That's the thing. Maybe the symbolism is more for book readers. Right. I'm not into books. I get distracted too easily. I like movies. I like shows. But yeah, too much symbolism, and you can definitely lose a crowd, or at least me, I can say that you'll lose me.
Right.
But with Jordan Peele's movies, I have to see Nope. I'm still intrigued to go see it.
Right.
But with the first two, I have to say I have my gripes with him. But I still think he has so much potential. Not just as a director, but as a writer. His concepts are usually pretty cool. You go into them knowing that you're going to see something semi-original, which I very much appreciate.
It's huge.
I thought Get Out and Us were original.
Right.
Nope seems to be original, even though you're tackling, like you said, a genre that's been done before. But he has his own interpretation.
Right.
And I will always appreciate that. I like him. I'm glad you said that word, masterpiece. It's not his masterpiece. Maybe he never will have one. Maybe as an audience, you'll always disagree and be like, no, his masterpiece was his first movie, Get Out.
Right.
Or you'll see, no, his masterpiece was his fifth movie. Who knows, you know, years from now, who knows what he's going to tackle next.
Right.
But I, for one, am looking forward to watching somebody who's not afraid to do something a little different.
Right.
And that's what I'll give him credit for.
Me? Not mainstream. So I appreciate that. So, I mean, definitely recommend watching it if you guys have the chance. It's in theaters, so go to the movies. I don't know. Read a book. I spark noted that shit.
Nope.
Nah, like books. Spark
noted. Oh, yeah.
Remember that shit?
I used to never do the summer reading. I never did.
Embarrassing me out here.
I don't know, I just don't like them. Boring. Out here got me reading Lord of the Flies. Get the fuck out of here. It's okay.
Alright, so next week we're going into the science fiction again.
Specifically, we've narrowed it down to a subsection of sci-fi. AI.
Oh, they're going to say like robot titties.
Robot titties are nice too.
Is that a sub?
I mean, I don't think so, because the problem is they're not really robot titties if it's a real human playing a robot. You know what I'm trying to say? So it doesn't count. You know, it's like, penalty.
I don't mind seeing robot titties. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, they're great. They're great because they're usually perfectly shaped and symmetrical. Supple and perky. Why am I talking about robot titties? But anyways, we're gonna be tackling Ex Machina and Archive. Not as popular, but I promise you, well worth the watch.
This clown.
I really enjoyed that movie.
Damn. That's gonna do it, guys. We really appreciate the support and all the feedback. If you liked today's episode or have ideas for future episodes, definitely get in contact with us. You can reach us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Our username is Film Purgatory or Film_Purgatory.
And please remember to turn on all notifications on your streaming services so you know as soon as we drop the latest episode.
Thanks again, guys, and we'll see you
next week.